This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Hey there, and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Rachel Geringer. In this episode, we bring you two stories about local efforts to invest in our towns and communities, both recorded by WMMT's Mimi Pickering. First, we'll learn about the recent naloxone training held at the Letcher County Health Department, which provided attendees with a free training on how to spot and respond to an opioid overdose. In the second piece, we'll learn about the first ever Great Mountain Mega Mural Fest held in Harlan County, Kentucky in early August.
Does anyone here know any of the more common signs of an opioid overdose? If not, that's all right. We can go ahead and just walk through this list here that you all have. And really the main one that you think of would be struggling to breathe or not breathing at all. And some other signs that are fairly common could include pinpoint pupils, so very small pupils, a blue or gray coloration to the lips or nails, pale and clammy skin, and also just sleepiness that's very difficult to arouse someone from, including from it mentions in your list.
On July 26th, the Letcher County Health Department hosted a free naloxone training in Whitesburg, Kentucky. Outside, the Kentucky Pharmacy Emergency Response Unit truck provided free naloxone nasal spray to participants who'd completed the training. WMMT's Mimi Pickering spoke with Jody Jaggers, the director of the Emergency Response Pharmacy.
Could you tell me your name?
Sure, my name's Jody Jaggers, and I'm with the Kentucky Pharmacists Association, and my title is the Director of Pharmacy Emergency Preparedness. And so the trailer that you're in here is the mobile pharmacy, and it's actually a state-owned emergency preparedness asset. It was purchased with federal preparedness dollars about 6 years ago. And so its mission would be to operate in a declared emergency where pharmaceutical services were needed. So what we're doing today isn't, as you can imagine, isn't necessarily emergency preparedness, but the way it ties in is that we're exercising the pharmacy, which instead of doing hypotheticals or tabletop exercises, we're actually putting it through its paces in a real-world setting. And we're able to do what we're doing today based on some legislation, Senate Bill 192, the heroin bill you probably heard about several years ago. That also, part of what it did was it allowed pharmacists to be able to distribute and dispense Narcan, or naloxone in general, Narcan's a trade name, to anybody that requested it via physician protocol. And so that's what we're doing today. Dr. Connie White, who's our state deputy health commissioner, she is the physician that's over the protocol we're using. And we come in and we use pharmacists that are certified to do the naloxone education, and pharmacy students that help out with that, do the education to folks in the community that want to, and then we just dispense out of the mobile pharmacy here. So we just do that in partnership with the Department of Public Health.
Now, does that mean that I can go to the pharmacist and get this?
Sure.
I don't need a prescription from a doctor?
It is still a prescription product, so you're getting a prescription. The difference is the pharmacist is the one that's issuing the prescription, and they're doing that pursuant to just some outlines that are in Kentucky regulations in the protocol. And it's some pretty basic stuff. I mean, what they go over in the education is the stuff that they're required to hit. So that's the thing that they're doing. You can go to pretty much any pharmacy, especially any chain pharmacy. They all do it. Independents, you probably have to check with them and see. But more or less in every county in Kentucky, if there's a chain pharmacy there, they're able to go in and do it. The biggest difference is it would be adjudicated to your insurance, be billed to your insurance. And so it may be a copay involved. Sometimes it comes back as no copay, but it may be, $3, $5, $10, $15, $50. It really just depends. And there's other forms of naloxone as well. There's Narcan, which is what we're doing today. That's the nasal form. There's a product called Evzio, which is like an EpiPen. If you've seen those, you're familiar with those. Same concept. When you open it, it talks to you and tells you how to, walks you through everything. And then there's like pre-filled syringes and vials where you can just draw them up. And they're also intramuscular, but there's a few more steps. And there's also products you can screw on the end of a pre-filled syringe, and it becomes nasal. It's not approved, but it's the FDA kind of said, okay, that's fine. But it's another alternative. So there's several products out there. We just focus on Narcan just for simplicity. It's super easy to teach people how to use it.
So So, you know, obviously we've got a problem, not just in Kentucky, but all around with opioids. And it's, it seems like it's putting pharmacists in kind of a different position or something.
Well, I mean, every healthcare professional is it's kind of an all hands on deck, because we all have to play our part in just being practicing responsibly. You know, prescribers have to reevaluate how they're prescribing and try to manage pain differently. Pharmacists have to make sure that we're paying attention. And it's stuff we've always done, but we have to be paying attention to the whole person, watching disease states, watching for not even suspicious behavior, because the reality is a lot of overdoses that happen are accidental overdoses from people taking opioids legitimately. You know, that's possible. But we just have to kind of be on our toes. It sometimes puts us in a position to be law enforcement, which we don't want to do. That's not what we're signed up for, but we all kind of have to play our role, just to be diligent, to make sure that what the prescriptions we're filling are valid and for valid needs. We don't want it just immediately be suspicious, so that's the thing, because people, you know, people have pain, people have needs, and there's a difference in being tolerant to medication and being dependent on it versus being addicted or struggling with opioid substance abuse. So those are all things that's kind of, it's always been there for the profession. We've always known that we have to be diligent on that, but now with the way things are changing from an enforcement perspective, it's really bringing things into very sharp focus for us, and we're having to be extra careful.
Do you think that attitudes are changing about addiction as well? Are we seeing it?
I hope.
I mean, there's a lot of shame and blame.
There is, and it's still, you know, one of the things I hate to do, but I'm drawn to anyways, whenever I see an article on substance abuse or anything on Facebook or on social media, I usually just glance at the comments, and it's always disheartening to me to see some of the hostility and just dismissal of individuals. You know, at the end of the day, every life matters, and that's hard. Even when people seemingly have made poor choices, it goes beyond that, and it is a disease. You know, there's a certain point where the brain chemistry is rewired, and where you're talking no longer is this just a poor choice. This is a compulsion. You know, people that are struggling fear withdrawal more than they fear death a lot of times. And that's something that it's hard unless you've been there, unless you've witnessed it, unless you are just an overly empathetic person. Sometimes it's hard. It's easier to be a little more callous, and I get it. I hope that attitudes are changing. I heard a statistic last night, actually. KET had a little forum, and the number from a fairly recent poll was that 7 in 10 Kentuckians now view opioid substance abuse disorder as an addiction. Or I'm sorry, as a disease, I apologize. And that's encouraging to see that, you know, when they view addiction as a disease, then we treat it as such, and we don't prosecute it. It's not a criminal thing we're dealing with. We're trying to treat the person. And so I do think attitudes are changing, but we've got a long way to go still. Because there's 30% of the population or more that don't. You know, they look at it as a moral failing, so.
This
is the only of these events. Okay, so this is our 41st event. We've been doing it since November of 2016. There are events that happen around the state with other groups, but as far as the mobile pharmacy and the dispensing, this is our 41st. So we've got, I think, 3 or 4 more booked already, but we've got a long list of counties that are interested in us coming.
And have you been in Eastern Kentucky much?
Primarily. We haven't ventured very far west. Almost everything has been east of I-75. So I'd say probably 3/4 or better of our events have been over here.
What's been the public reception when you come in like this?
It varies. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes who's public and who's a healthcare employee unless, you know, we ask, because sometimes you can't just by looking at people. Mostly positive, though. I mean, at least the people that are participating, we don't hear the negatives because we've never had protesters, mercifully. But, you know, from the people that participate, we get a lot of, you know, we're really glad you're here, we appreciate this, it's a great service, you know, thank you. And we hear personal stories, too. I mean, people about, yeah, I've heard several times, I wish I would have had this, you know, because they had a loved one they've lost, or I'm thankful that I do have this because now I don't feel helpless with a loved one that's going through substance abuse disorder. So, we do hear those stories from time to time, and it's always encouraging when we do. But generally, it's been positive. So.
Yeah, that would be rewarding, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, I think, you know, the Surgeon General of the United States has been a focus for him. And, you know, he views this, and I don't disagree with him, that for the public, this is almost tantamount to learning CPR. You know, if you want to be the kind of person that's just ready to help another person in the community, even if you don't think you know anybody that's affected, you do. I don't think there's anybody, especially in Kentucky, that is more than one person removed. They may not realize it, but they probably go to church with folks that are struggling. You know, they work with folks that are struggling. Whether it's that person or whether it's one of their loved ones, So just being prepared and then just being aware, just watching. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just awareness. And then once you have that training and the knowledge, and being willing to act.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
Also on site was an AIDS Volunteers, Inc. mobile clinic providing free HIV and hepatitis C testing.
So both of these tests are antibody tests. And what that means is that if you've been exposed, it's going to show up.
Okay.
If you've been, for the HIV test, if you've been exposed in the last 3 months, it may not, just depend on your body's reaction to the virus. For the hepatitis C test, if you've ever tested positive for hepatitis C, regardless of whether or not you actually have it, because bodies can actually overcome the virus for hepatitis C, it's going to show up on this one. So some people will be like, oh, I was told to get retested just to verify. If it's ever shown up positive on a hepatitis C, it's going to show up positive on mine. So you actually, if we get a reactive, we usually recommend someone go to like their local health department or their primary care physician in order to get a proper confirmatory test. Because again, we're just testing for the antibody.
Okay. Cool.
Mimi Pickering spoke with Matt Brewer, AVOL Manager of HIV Prevention and Education.
My name is Matt Brewer, and I work for AVOL, AIDS Volunteers, Inc., out of Lexington, Kentucky, and I am the manager of HIV prevention and education.
And what are you doing today?
So today we are kind of partnering up with the Kentucky Department of Public Health. They are distributing the Narcan for free, they're training people how to use it. And then we are offering HIV and hepatitis C testing today. So it's the HIV test takes about 1 minute, and then the hepatitis C test takes about 20 minutes. So the two kind of go hand in hand together. The Narcan unit is kind of trying to help alleviate some of the opioid epidemic that's ravaging the state. And then with the opioid epidemic comes, you know, bloodborne pathogens, hepatitis C, HIV, amongst many other things as well. So Kentucky currently leads the nation in viral hepatitis C infections, and it's prime real estate for an HIV epidemic as well. So that's why we're here today, is just trying to hopefully stop any kind of spread of the illness and trying to empower those people who are, you know, kind of pushed aside in society. So, yeah.
And I understand that you have been coming into Eastern Kentucky a good bit. And
we have been. So we recently got the Elton John AIDS Foundation. They gave us a grant, which allowed us to create a mobile unit, a testing unit, where we can actually take our services out into the communities that are high risk. So we've spent a lot of time in Eastern Kentucky developing a resource database called HINKY, Health Education Network Kentucky, which is a kind of a, you can either download it to an app or it's also a website, and you can look up different resources, whether that be testing or treatment facilities, syringe exchanges, things like that. But then we also come out to different drug courts, different rehabilitation centers, you know, methadone clinics, suboxone clinics, to try to connect with people who are currently injecting drugs or facing that kind of stigma as well.
188 people attended the event, which organizers explained is the largest attendance they've had at a training so far in the entire state. Attendees included several young people from the community.
Why'd you come over here today?
To learn a little bit about overdoses and how to prevent them, just in case, you know. It's good to be extra safe and look out for people.
As a young person, do you think this is an issue y'all have to face?
To me, in my life, not really, kinda. Like, I have a lot of people in my family that do opioids. And, like, I have friends that party a lot. I'm normally, like, the designated driver when they want to go places. And, like, I feel like if I just carry this with me, it's going to help them if they ever get in that situation. So, yeah.
You're going to be the designated helper.
Yeah, always.
Good of you, pretty big of you.
Yeah. I'm like the mom of our group, honestly. Always here to help.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So did you find the training interesting?
Yeah. It was a lot to take in because, I mean, it's like a very serious problem, especially in this area. But, like, I learned a lot. Like, if I ever get in that situation, I'll know what to do now, especially with the pamphlet they gave out. I think everybody honestly needs to take this training just to be safe.
So, I mean, you've been in high school just recently. Could you see it happening in that? High school, would that be good?
Yeah, actually we've had a few overdoses at school. It's not been on like major stuff, but I mean it still happened, and not a lot of people know what to do in that situation, so I guess that's why this is here, just to help people out.
My name is Morgan Hopkins. I'm 18 and I'm from Whitesburg, Kentucky.
What brought you out today?
I wanted to come to the Narcon training with my mother to hopefully get some experience on how to help people that have opioid overdoses and how to treat that and new techniques, because we're advancing in techniques to help people who overdose. And I also wanted to come out just to get testing done in general, because it's always good, like she said, to keep up on your health and to make sure that everything's safe and everything's contained and everything's good, especially with the hepatitis going around and everything. It's getting really bad, and it's always good to keep up. It's never anything to be ashamed of to come get testing done, but both of those combined, being here in one day, is a really good experience. So it's just coming out today in general was just to be more aware and be more safe concerning your health and everything that goes along with it.
And I overheard you say your age, but you're a younger person.
Uh-huh.
And how do you think this is affecting young people in our area?
Young people in our area are influenced by older people in our area. The more they see their parents do, or the more they see adult role models do, the more they do. And it's beginning to become really bad because it's cheap and it's readily available. So people are overdosing more and more every day on things like this and things like that and things, opioids, everything. It's just getting so bad. And it's becoming a very big problem in the younger community, because it's also an easy way to make money. If you can find the stuff and you can sell the stuff, then you have that money and you have enough to get you through the next day. And it's very easy to get from kid to kid in the school systems and in everywhere that you can. So it's affecting us very hard, especially in the money situation. It's a fast way to make money, and it's bad. It's getting bad.
Last in this episode of Mountain News, we bring you sounds from the recent Great Mountain Mega Mural Fest. In early August, Harlan County, Kentucky hosted the first ever Great Mountain Mural Mega Fest.
Okay. So, can you guys all hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at what we've done, and let's talk a little bit about our game plan. So, are you feeling sort of this idea of this overpainting? Uh-huh. At this point, you're going to see that there's a lot of interpretations of this. It makes sense, because we're all individuals, that we have different brush strokes, just like we have different handwriting, right? At some point, though, we're going to want this to sort of get consistent. So there's a couple things we're gonna like meet in the middle, and we're gonna really practice looking at what our neighbor is doing and finding what our stroke is as a group. Okay? So I've given you like that first guide, and now we're gonna see what happens.
The weekend event brought together local community members, regional artists, and national muralists to plan and paint a mural in Cumberland, Kentucky. We just heard Greta McLean of the Minneapolis, Minnesota-based Good Space Murals, an organization that uses public art to promote community development. Good Space Murals artists served as trainers and mural designers. The event was hosted by the Southeast Kentucky Revitalization Project, based at the Southeast Kentucky Community and Technical College. Program Director Robert Geip explained more about the event.
We're doing a training for artists who are interested in either learning how to do murals or are interested in learning new skills in doing murals. And it's called the Great Mountain Mural Mega Fest. And it's a part of a project that we're doing called the Southeast Kentucky Revitalization Project. My office here at Southeast Kentucky Community and Technical College in Harlan County is coordinating that. And the overarching project is to train local people in workforce skills that can be useful in community redevelopment, building renovation, downtown renovation, And so the work that we're doing with artists is hopefully going to lead directly to more murals in communities in the region and more money for local artists to paint those murals. So we're tracking what kind of impact it makes on artist income. And it's a part of the larger project includes also we're working with contractors. We're doing commercial roofing training because a lot of times even when we do renovate, we have to contract out some of these skills to other parts of the country because we don't have the skilled labor here. So we're trying to help address that. And then the other part of our project is in hospitality management. We're working with restaurants and hotels to kind of see if we can develop sustainable models for training hospitality workers. But yeah, so it's kind of a combination of workforce development and community development, and it's pretty exciting, but it's also very new, so it's been a big learning curve, a lot of challenges there.
Candida Gonzalez is the co-owner and community development director of Good Space Murals.
Yeah, so tell me what we got here.
All right, so these are prayers and intentions that were written by the participants in the Mega Mountain Mural Workshop for the mural and what it can do for the community here in Cumberland. So the idea is that we are infusing this mural with all of our prayers and all of our intentions and all of our hopes and all of our dreams for what this piece of art can do to transform the Cumberland community. These will be installed underneath the polytab of the main mural image. And so nobody's ever going to see these, but they're going to live inside the mural and work to make this mural be a catalyst for positive growth in the community. You know, it's always difficult for us when we go into a community that's not our own, that we have never visited, that we're not physically in before we come to make the mural. How do we make the most connection possible? How do we make sure that the image that we are creating is something that is really informed by the community? We never want to walk into a community and say, this is our idea for what you should have for your story and your wall. We really want it to reflect what the people in the community are thinking. So Robert Geip has been phenomenal. He ran a bunch of activities with people here in Cumberland and in Harlan that really, they wrote Dear Artist letters saying what they wanted to see on the mural. And those were just, I mean, deep and heart-wrenching and inspirational. And I, if every community could write letters like those, we would just be so honored. I mean, we were honored to receive these words. And so then we just had a lot of back and forth with Robert and with three local mural artists who are assisting on the project, and Buffy, whose wall this is going on, and some of the other people here at the college, just about the design and the ideas for the design. And we went through a couple of sessions of edits after we gave the draft of the design and came upon something that everyone felt really good about.
In addition to Greta and Candida, regional artists and community development experts led workshops on arts techniques and the business side of muraling. Buffy Henry owns the building in downtown Cumberland where the mural was being painted.
My name's Buffy Henry, and I'm the owner of Bus, Buzz, and Gis, and this is my building here that they're doing the mural on.
So what's this process been like?
It's exciting. It's really exciting. They approached me probably about a month and a half ago, asking if I would be willing to let them use my building for this mural, and I was really excited because, you know, it's going to make a difference and be an eye catcher for people coming into the community and hopefully draw more business into my store as well.
Your mom was just telling me a little bit about your store, and tell me a little bit about your history.
I grew up in the area. I grew up in Lynch, graduated from Cumberland High School, went away to UK, never thought I would come back home. I was gone for over 20 years, then I moved back home. Started my business 8 years ago, moved back home about six, and it's been interesting moving back home. I really enjoyed it. There's no place like home.
Tell me the name of your business and what you sell.
I've got Bus, Buzz, and Gifts, and also our florist is Buffy's Lazy Daisy here in Cumberland. We sell a variety of things. We have everything from candles, Simply Southern, UK. We do weddings, just about anything, home decor, just about anything. We try to be a one-stop shop for people here. So, Yeah, Harry Vere Bradley.
And what do you think will be the impact of having this piece of art here?
I think it's going to be a really good thing. That's what, the more things we have in this downtown area, things to make people stop and get out of their car and not just drive through. And I think this is going to be a real eye catcher that will make people want to stop and see what there is to offer in this area.
Participants and organizers alike had glowing feedback about the event. Pineville, West Virginia artist Laura Burdett shared her experience.
I'm learning to paint murals. I'm a studio artist. I've been a studio artist since about 1998, and I sell to gift shops and things, and my mentor passed away who got me started in murals, and this happened at just the right time. So now I can pick up where he left off.
Has it been good so far?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is wonderful.
Muralist Candida Gonzalez described how welcome she felt in the mountains of eastern Kentucky.
I've never been to eastern Kentucky, and so the ride here, just seeing the mountains for the first time and the vegetation, just being blown away by the natural beauty, which we've been hearing about as we've talked to the people here in Kentucky remotely for weeks now. We've heard a lot about the natural beauty, and they were not lying. It is gorgeous here. It also reminds me a lot of the mountains of Puerto Rico, which is where my family is from, and which I've heard other Puerto Ricans who have come here have said the same thing. So I feel a bit of a kinship and connection to the place, even though I've never been here. And everybody has been extremely friendly. So it's really great to be here.
It was clearly a fun and creative weekend for all. But Robert Geip explains that murals and public art also have a vital role to play in economic revitalization in the coal fields.
Well, I think we're in a situation right now where, one, we need business. We need people to want to bring their businesses here, and we need to encourage our businesses that are here, that as a community we're trying to make this a place where people would want to be so that those businesses can prosper. And, you know, we're now in the internet age. We're in an age where workers can very often live wherever they want to. And the communities that don't attend to quality of life, that don't make themselves places people want to be, I just don't see how they're going to thrive in the new economy. And so I think everywhere we go now, we see communities in eastern Kentucky understanding that. And we see the ones that do understand that are beginning to revive. They're beginning to be places that people want to be because they're places to eat, because it's a beautiful environment. Not just the natural environment, but the human-built environment is beautiful, so that people feel like the people who live there think their place is a place people would want to be, instead of just being abandoned buildings and burned-down buildings that we're talking about. Buildings that are beautiful, buildings that people have put their time and care into. And I mean, I'm sure there's research, but I mean, it seems like common sense to me that people would understand that if you drive through a town, it's not hard to understand which places people act like they're proud of, which places people act like they want to take the time and resources to invest in to make them beautiful. And those are the places other people want to be. Those are the places that I think businesses will want to be. And so it's all a part of building the community back.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website at www.wmmt.org or on SoundCloud and Stitcher. Music on this episode comes from Ralph Blizzard and the New Southern Ramblers with a tune called Smith's Waltz from their album Blizzard Train, which was released by Appleshop's own June Apple Records. I've been your host, Rachel Geringer, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.